it's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. Gene Bolduc, your host, and I'm here with my my hero, I think.
Oh, thanks.
Dr. Aaron Keck.
I'll go along with that.
Dr. Aaron, you know, I'm not even going to use your last name anymore because, you know, you're bigger than Dr. Phil in my life. And my senior political analyst.
I think it would be sad if Dr. Phil were bigger than me in your life because we actually know each other, whereas
really,
Dr. Phil is not really worth
Dr.
watching
Phil,
in the first place.
How is that guy still on the air?
Same reason everyone else is.
He's getting ratings.
Somebody's watching that. He's very good at pandering. He's very good at telling people what they want to hear.
Is it not in his contract to say at least once every 8 minutes on that program, "What were you thinking?"
Well, I mean, it's the people that he has on the show.
And they come
act like they're really
big aha moment for them when he
says it, right?
Do they never watch the show?
I will say from the little I've seen of Dr. Phil and the little I've seen of Dr. Oz, I'll take Dr. Phil any day.
I will take Dr. Phil.
Yeah.
Because he's not saying that he's, you know, medically important.
Yeah. Dr. Phil is more like
square up to your brother-in-law and tell him to give you your car back.
Take responsibility for I can't do a Dr. Phil impression because I haven't really heard him, but take responsibility for yourself and this and that,
pay
which is a perfectly fine.
Be nice
approach.
To your mama. What's wrong with that?
As opposed to Dr. Oz, which is what is he even? Crystals will help you lose weight. I don't really watch the show.
Wow, he is really, really something.
Like the people who are listening to us who also listen to Dr. Oz right now are like, what is he talking about?
No, All we talk about is practice. Is that the right word? The practice, how one practices politics.
Yes.
At every level in our world. So it's been, I guess it's, you know, I talk to Aaron on the program about once a month, and of course every Friday afternoon here at CHL at about 3:30, just saying, set your watch.
Yes.
And, you know, so what's happened in the last month in politics, Aaron? Not much.
Not much.
And that, you know, sleepy legislation passed, none.
Right.
You know, impeachment is on the horizon. It's getting. I'd like to see a word cloud from a month ago.
Oh, versus
compared
today.
To today,
for how many
public officials are using the word.
Yeah.
Nancy Pelosi seems interestingly reluctant to go there about using, literally avoiding the word.
One thing that's really fascinating to me about the whole the Russian investigation thing has been going on really since before Trump took office.
It's about a year old, actually.
Yeah, and we were fully aware a year ago, and I don't know how many other people remember this, but so was Donald Trump. This is the guy who got up in front of the cameras and actively encouraged the Russians to hack into and release Hillary's missing emails. Now,
so true. And around this time last year, maybe a month or so before, from almost nowhere, Paul Manafort appears in the Trump campaign. Paul Manafort, not really a guy who's a Trump crony or in his circle. And it's pretty well documented, I think, now that Paul Manafort, Kellyanne Conway, and Steve Bannon were delivered unto Donald Trump as a package deal that Manafort was going to run the convention. And in doing so, put that language in, or more accurately, perhaps took it out of the platform for the Republican Party, criticized the language that criticized the Russian invasion of Crimea and interference in Ukraine. You know, so this is now we know that that a criminal investigation dates back to this time last year.
All of which is to say that when the impeachment discussion began, the talk initially was about collusion with the Russians to commit illegal activity, right? That was what the talk was. And now things have shifted in a really interesting way. Now the talk isn't so much, although it's still there, about, right, you know, was there collusion with the Russians to commit illegal activity? I think without knowing for sure, and the evidence is still sort of trickling out, but I suspect ultimately what we're going to find out there, and we were talking before we started about Lindsey Graham's comment, right, Senator Graham in South Carolina, who made the comment earlier that I don't really think Donald Trump colluded with the Russians because I'm not convinced that he even colludes with his own staff.
I think that's a fair
which is
statement.
A perfectly insightful point. And I think, I suspect what's going to end up being revealed is that there was collusion between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. Trump himself...
I don't think
the evidence is going to be there,
and
to
they don't
be honest.
Need them anyway.
Right. I don't think the evidence is going to be there for that. So I think that's going to end up being a dead end. But the interesting, and maybe I'm wrong, we'll see. But the
what?
Really interesting thing that, I've been wrong before, I'll be wrong again. The really interesting thing, though, is that there's been this shift now away from that a little bit and towards obstruction of justice with the whole James Comey thing. Was he fired by Donald Trump, or was he pressured to drop the investigation? Was he
right.
let go because of that? Which, again, Trump goes on NBC and concedes that on a nationally televised interview.
Right. I don't think he ever would have made it as a spy. I'll just put it that way.
That's fair.
I would love to play
poker
with him.
Or maybe he's the best spy.
Yeah.
Maybe, that's
pretty unlikely.
Maybe he's like Johnny English, where he just sort of stumbles and
Who
bumbles
is
and
English?
Is really super. It's Rowan Atkinson's James Bond parody, where he's
just
stumbling and bumbling and being really loud and drawing attention to himself at every turn. And that's the person you would least expect would be a spy, and then he's just gathering information.
And this reminds me so much, as so many things do, of the SNL bit that they did, you know, where Reagan was really a genius. And all that. And even though he put on a public face
Phil
of
Hartman
being a daughter
well,
and
Reagan,
fool.
That was a great sketch.
That was just, oh, I miss Phil Hartman so much.
Yeah.
That was, well, you know. The thing is with the Donald... that the Donald doesn't need to be the guy who's the mastermind in order for him to be not just thrown out of the government, but run out of town on a rail. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at what the actual evidence was of Nixon's role in Watergate, it was when the tapes were finally, when the issue of the tapes was decided by the court, and the tapes actually came out and were listened to by Republicans on the Select Committee, and the discussion of the cover-up occurred in Nixon's presence, and he said what you just said, which is, that was enough. That's all it took to send Barry Goldwater up to the White House
to
say,
House.
Mr. President, you're
that's
done.
It. Yeah.
These conversations occurred in your office by your staff.
You knew about it. You were there.
You knew about it. You were there.
So you're involved in the cover-up.
You did not say, holy mackerel, you guys are breaking the law. Stop right now.
Yep.
So none of that happened. And so what was essentially revealed, and we're going to get into this a mile deep, I hope, in the next segment, is what happened there is that it was revealed that the president, in the most egregious way, had brazenly lied about his role.
And
that was the one thing that,
yeah.
you know, the one lie, and it was a big one, but he lied about, you know, some guys breaking into an office.
Yeah. And two things out of that. First of all, again, it wasn't necessarily that Richard Nixon was in the room with Liddy and whoever else
right.
actively planning
that's
the
right.
Watergate break-in, but once it had happened, being involved in the cover-up, that's obstruction of justice. That's enough.
Right.
And the other thing, too, is people are still talking about Russian hacking and illegal activity during the 2016 election as if it matters whether or not that affected the outcome of the 2016 election.
And by the way, it may yet come
it
to pass
may
that
have,
it did.
It may not have.
I'm still wondering about that.
Conservatives who are defending Trump now, and you hear this comment frequently, say, oh,
the Democrats can't
matter.
Let it go.
The Russians didn't go to the polls and vote.
Right.
The Russians
That's
didn't
right.
hack the election system. Donald Trump won fair and square. And the response to that is to look back to 1972, where you have a Watergate break-in and the cover-up,
right.
which was illegal activity designed to give one party advantage over the other in the election.
Right.
That election in 1972 was not a difficult victory for Richard Nixon.
No,
that was one
was
of the biggest landslides
yeah,
in
a squeaker. 49
a generation.
States is pretty decisive, I think.
Yeah. No one at any point is suggesting that the Watergate break-in or the subsequent cover-up
made the
difference
right.
between Nixon and McGovern.
That's what makes it extra stupid for Nixon, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, exactly. But it does not matter. The point is that it was illegal activity committed and that there was a cover-up. Whether it affected
right.
the outcome of the election or not is a red herring, and
that's,
we should be
yeah.
aware of it as a red
right.
herring.
And that's a great piece about that I've heard some lawyers talk about, which is, you know, even if the underlying crime turns out not to be a crime and the person was totally innocent of it, if he tried to cover it up and obstructed justice,
mm-hmm.
that's still a crime.
Yeah.
So you know. It's,
and this is what we're saying about
the crime,
Trump
the
and Comey. This is an investigation into Russian collusion that could conceivably clear Donald Trump 100%.
And impeach him anyway.
But if he interferes with it,
right.
then that becomes an issue too. One thing that I'll add, and I know we got to take a break
yes,
in a
do.
Minute, is people are talking about Donald Trump resigning. I think they're hoping that Donald Trump will resign. I
yeah.
don't suspect that Donald Trump will ever resign for
no.
the sole whether he wants to be president or not. And I think there's a lot to be said for the idea that he never wanted to be president in the first place. He just wanted
right.
attention. I don't think he'll ever resign because that would be admitting defeat, and that's the one thing Trump will never
He's really
do.
Not
if he's going to leave before.
But if somebody could convince him that that would be the way to show them all, that might do it.
Theoretically,
we're
yes.
going to work on that during the break. Gene Bolduc here talking with Aaron Keck about overthrowing the government, pretty much.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
it's,
you know, not really.
Yeah.
Not that much. Stick with us here on the Weekend Water Cooler. We'll be back in just a minute here on 97.9 The Hill. Hey, we're back here at the water cooler. I'm moving my mic. Sorry if it sounds like anything. I'm talking with Aaron Keck, and we are.
It usually does, and I move that mic all the time.
It usually does, and you move that mic all the time. So sorry about your ears, dear listeners. Talking with Dr. Keck here about more about the president, and in this case, I want to talk a little bit about I think sort of the subhead of the screaming headlines that we've seen. You know, by the way, it looks to me like all the biggest news breaks between 9 and 11 p.m., which is it's part of the internet phenomenon that they file the night before and get it out there.
Well, that's why Trump's got to tweet at 3 a.m. because
why,
he's
right.
responding directly
exactly.
to something that has just been
announced
in the
wow,
news.
Incredible,
yeah.
incredible self-sacrifice on his part.
Mm-hmm.
And
at least
that
you
is,
know he's awake to take that 3 a.m.
Yeah,
phone
that's
call,
right.
and
well,
he's got the phone in
up.
His hand.
You know,
so he'll
I
be,
really think, and you can correct me about this if I'm wrong, but I think Hillary's probably prank calling him at 3 o'clock just
Ooh.
To wake him up. I mean, you know she's got the number of that bedroom. She can probably just direct dial that bedroom.
Oh, and the cell phone. She's probably had his cell phone since before
right.
the campaign even
right.
began.
Well,
yeah.
she probably got it from Putin, but, you know, she's probably got a burner phone that she calls him from once a week and then just throws the phone away. that would crack me up so bad I wouldn't be able to take it.
We talk about the irresponsibility of the media in terms of covering national politics. I know that people on the left and people on the right, for different reasons, are continually upset that Hillary Clinton is still injecting herself into the headlines.
Nerve of that woman.
She's not injecting herself into the headlines. The journalists that are responsible for deciding what goes above the fold and what leads the nightly news are the ones who make the decision to put a comment by Hillary Clinton in the headlines. Like someone, she's speaking at a thing and someone asked her a question about the 2016 election.
And
she's not going to say,
oh
I'm not going
to
answer that question. She'll answer it. The fact that it gets picked up by the national media The issue more than Hillary Clinton saying anything. If we just didn't really care about it, then it wouldn't be
a big headline.
It's a two-way street.
This is what I ask my friends all the time. You know, every day, tens of thousands of airplanes take off and land safely. Are you going to read a story about that in the newspaper? Are you going to buy the paper because that's the lead story in the paper? That how many people got in their cars, drove to work, went out to the movies, came home, put the car in the garage, didn't have an accident, nothing happened? No, you're going to buy the paper because there's a story about a plane crash, not about the tens of thousands of safe.
And not even a plane crash, but a plane incident.
How many of us in the last month have
talked about, oh, another incident involving United Airlines. They're so terrible. Why? Like, it's in the news every single day. Well, yes, it's in the news every single day because there was that one bad incident that happened and everyone got obsessed about that.
And now, and everybody clicked on it.
Literally every single time there is any incident at all on any United Airlines flight, of which there are thousands every day, it's going to make the news. It's going to be headlines. People are going to click on it, which encourages the media outlets to keep posting those stories and keep reporting on it.
Right.
And then you get this media narrative, which everyone 100% buys into, that United Airlines is terrible, when in fact it's really not any worse or better
than... And yet all these people climb on their planes every
day. And the other thing, too, is that the people who are most likely to just sort of unquestioningly accept that media narrative are exactly the same ones who complain about how biased the media is and the mainstream, lamestream media and complain about that so much. Those are the same people
who are watching
buy into the media narrative 100%. It would be hilarious if it weren't sad.
Well, and you know,
it may still be hilarious.
The news media is in the business of putting on the front page for your consideration what they consider to be a representation of multiple sides of a controversy.
Yes.
In any arena.
Yeah. We've done that too on WCHL.
Well,
we shouldn't talk about the media as if it's this
monolithic
thing where every media outlet is exactly the same. But we've done that too on WCHL. If you go to like a town hall meeting, for instance, or a town council meeting or a Board of Aldermen meeting, and it's a big controversial issue and you get 50 people speaking in favor of doing such and such and one person speaking against, and then it's an 8-1 vote on the town council to do the thing. I guarantee you, when it gets reported on, not just by us, but by other media outlets that cover the town council, those two sides are going to be covered as if they're roughly equivalent. Because we don't have time in the 3 minutes that we have to tell a story or the 600 words that a paper has to tell the story to say this person said in favor, this person was in favor, this person was in favor, and this person was opposed. You get one representative person in favor, one representative person who was opposed. The vote was 8-1, and then the story ends up looking like the debate was roughly equal, when it wasn't.
That's right. Yeah. But it also is an issue of fairness that that the news media, in my experience, both working in it and just as a consumer, that the news media wants to go for the angle that is not the expected, which is you know, the town finances the budget for the police department. The police chief says, I'm not picking on the police department. The police chief says, well, there's been a little bit of an uptick in property crimes and these types of incidents, and we want to add two more officers to walk a beat, and the city council...
Big spike in property crime.
That's right. And the city council says, that seems reasonable. We care about people feeling safe in town. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Oppose, no. No. And there's one voice that says no. As a reporter, I'm going straight to the no, because I totally get that the people who are saying aye, in fact, they often will say so. Well, I respect the chief, and if this is what he needs, I'm going to give it to him. When the person is saying no, it's worthy of exploration.
Yes.
It is the man bites dog angle to say, why would you vote against funding the police department? Yep. Are you pro-crime? You know, so
is what it's going to say in the campaign flyer
that comes out in a month and a half.
Yeah.
If Charlie Unusual in the back row is the only person who comes up to public comment and says,
I don't feel
we shouldn't
like that's
have a police department
name.
At all. We should police ourselves and whatever. Now, as a reader, aren't you more interested, even if that seems a little bit nutty, aren't you a little bit more
especially
interested in reading that?
Especially because that seems a little bit nutty?
Yeah, I mean, we have a thing we call the nut box in the news business, which is the bare facts of certain issues that you put in a box on the side. So
and I'm
that
not even saying
people who don't pay attention to this at all will understand
that's not
understand
even necessarily
it.
Irresponsible journalism. I'm not saying that. It's just like that's the way that news gets covered, and
we
should be aware
like,
of it when we consume
journalism. That the newspaper has as its objective, in part, not entirely, but in part, an important part, that they'd like to have a job tomorrow and they'd have to sell newspapers.
They want to write
stories that people are interested in.
Yeah, and that people will read and click on
and consume.
Not
necessarily the most important thing that happened.
Yep.
Right.
I will just point out at this point that Gene had absolutely zero intention of spending this entire segment talking about the media and analyzing it, but you invited a journalist onto the show and I hijacked your segment.
I appreciate that. And folks, this is what you need to understand is the art of the filibuster and how good Dr. Keck is at it. And we'll be back with more filibustering, with any luck at all, with Dr. Aaron Keck. Gene Bolduc here, Weekend Water Cooler, here on WCHL, the craziest place in town right now, 97.9 The Hill. We'll be right back. And we're back with Dr. Aaron Keck. This time we're going to get to Article 2. I mean it. So Article 2 of the Constitution specifically states that the president will take care to make sure that the laws are faithfully executed.
I've got it here. He shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed.
Now, shall, for those of you law students who have nothing better to do than listen to this program, first of all, you should get back to work. Secondly, the law is very particular about that word shall. It doesn't mean the same thing, of course, as may. May is a thing that you say when you mean to suggest that people have discretion about whether or how they do something. But shall means that you are compelled to do it. And I would suggest, and I don't think it's a wild thing to say, that if you fail to do it, then you are derelict in your responsibilities under the Constitution. It's pretty clear to me that on multiple fronts that Donald Trump has failed to ensure that the laws of the United States are faithfully executed. And by the way, this ain't got nothing to do with Russia. This is about you did what? You fired all the U.S. attorneys and have yet to replace them. This, again, is something that would be a blockbuster story in our news cycle start to finish for the last, how long has it been? It's like 2 months. He fired all of these U.S. attorneys before he fired Comey.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, it makes it pretty difficult for the Justice Department to just, you know, step up and throw resources at the investigation from a legal standpoint. But also, it means, I guess, he must have determined that crime had stopped in the United States.
Well, he took office, so therefore...
Yeah,
it
so they wouldn't dare.
And in fairness, crime is down 50% from 25 years ago. It's a generational trend that you didn't hear about if you listened to the presidential debates. But
that only occurred this year.
Do you remember in 1993 when Bill Clinton took office, like right after he took office, one of the first things he did because he was becoming president for the first time. He didn't realize this was uncouth, was he fired everyone at the travel office and tried to replace them with his people, and it turned out that they were civil servants, and you should not do that.
You couldn't do that. That was an incredible dullard act, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a dumb. Well,
pretty,
I mean, it's
pretty dopey that nobody was in the infrastructure of the
and
White House to
tell
say,
him that.
Oh, actually, can't do that, sir.
But that was huge news for a while.
Yes.
It even got assigned
a
name.
Gate.
It was Travelgate.
It was a gate
for a while, and it was a big deal.
There you go.
And there was a lot of controversy and talk. Trump firing the U.S. attorneys is a significantly bigger deal than Clinton firing the travel office, which was a big deal to begin with. And Trump firing the attorneys came and went in the news cycle because there's just so much more going on all at the same time.
And it also obstructed. And, you know, we were just talking in our last segment about certain people hijacking the entire segment of a program on which he's a guest.
The customer is always right.
The customer is not always right. It's my opinion that this was done to obstruct and distract from the fact that the U.S. Attorney of the Eastern District of New York had been asked by, well, let me back up. All presidents have the prerogative and the expectation that they will appoint their own U.S. attorneys, mm-hmm. all of them. But almost none of them would ever do this all at once. I don't think there's a precedent for any president doing that. As they appoint replacements, there is transition for continuity, and the outgoing U.S. attorney may remain in the job for 6 months, 8 months, even a year, until their replacement comes on board. But giving everybody the sack and having no one to replace them, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Some of them are asked to stay on and continue in the new administration. This is particularly true when the party changes in the presidency. And what happened here was that the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of New York was asked by the Trump administration, by the president, to stay on and continue in his role as U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of New York. And in doing so, that is a very important U.S. attorney appointment. That particular U.S. attorney's office has jurisdiction over Wall Street, and a lot of international money laundering cases go through that district. That U.S. attorney, it is believed, I don't think we know this yet as a matter of public record, but the speculation is that U.S. attorney had impaneled a grand jury and was looking into money laundering related to the Trump company, Trump International. So that U.S. attorney got fired abruptly, and then all of the U.S. attorneys got fired. So no one could just jump in and take the case for him. So that's the first guy that the president fired who was investigating the president.
So let me jump back, because there's two things that you're talking about there. You're talking about potentially obstructing an investigation, which
right.
I don't know enough about to comment or ask on intelligently. But the other thing is that the lack of the attorneys means that the laws are not being faithfully executed. Do we know that? Is there
Certainly backs up the system. I think it might be is justice delayed, justice denied is a fair question.
Do we know that the system is more backlogged now than it was?
Well, that's a fair question.
Yeah.
I don't have information.
I mean, honestly, I don't know. And
if it
were the case, then it would be on page 12 of the newspaper.
Yeah, how would you
because
know?
There's
it
so
would,
much going
yeah.
on. But
right.
that would be an interesting question.
Of course,
to,
there are also judgeships that are waiting for appointments that have not happened. The chart of the number of presidential appointments that are waiting versus the number of that have been made is a staggering chart. Radio doesn't convey charts very well, but, you know, get a picture of a great, big, delicious apple pie and a tiny, tiny sliver missing, and that tiny sliver is the number of appointments that have gone through. Another tiny sliver that's only slightly bigger is the number of people who have been nominated for positions that are open, and the rest are just open. No nominations pending. There's no political process that's stopping up the drain. It's a lack of process in the White House
yeah.
and in the administration for driving this process and operating the government. And right now, because of the situation that's going on with the White House and with these investigations, Donald Trump has been unable to hire any of the top criminal defense attorneys in Washington who would normally leap at the chance to defend a president.
This is
that's extraordinary.
This is a situation where, I mean, we talk about the level of dysfunction, certainly, in the White House, and you can make a real strong case for just straight-up incompetence, but dysfunction, certainly.
Absolutely.
First and foremost.
Mixed messaging. Wow.
I think that's something, and I've said this before, I think that's the one thing that Democrats and progressives should be celebrating about this White House, because, man, if he had the ideas that he had and he were actually capable of actualizing them,
right,
that would be worse. The one point where incompetence or dysfunction becomes a real issue is with respect to health care, where more and more it's becoming clear that the Trump administration is consciously not acting to support the Affordable Care Act, as the Affordable Care Act requires the national government to do, in order to destabilize Obamacare, to create a crisis artificially that would then lead to the need for legislation. We're seeing that happen, and that's bad. But generally speaking, the fact that Trump has not been able to appoint the sort of people that you know he would appoint to those high-ranking positions, I'm almost kind of fine with.
Yeah, you know, remember all that we're going to have the best people and we're going to have the best of the best and so forth. And, you know, throw it on the pile of broken promises.
Yeah.
I don't put too much stock in that.
We didn't talk on this show. We talked on the Aaron Keck
show
on 3:30 on a Friday afternoon, which y'all should tune into as well, about the fact that Congress, other than confirming Neil Gorsuch and the House passing the Health Care Act, which then immediately
thudded
in the Senate and hasn't moved since, Congress hasn't done anything. I'm fine with that, because what would Congress do if they were doing things? They'd be passing bills I wouldn't like. So
it's the control Z president and the control Z Congress.
Yeah.
It's all about undo,
which he's doing to a degree with executive orders, which, you know, that's his prerogative, because, I mean, Obama was kind of forced to by the circumstances of congressional obstruction, but he did a lot of stuff with executive orders that he probably shouldn't have been doing with executive orders for, among other reasons, this reason, that the next president could just stroke with a pen
undo
it. Right.
And he's, you know,
like, we knew that was going to be
the case. He wanted these things to be done legislatively, but said, I can't stand here and do nothing.
Yeah.
So I miss Obama. Okay. All right, well, we're going to be back with one last segment. I don't know how Aaron's going to hijack this segment. It's always on my mind.
I've got a whole bunch of ideas.
I know he does. You're listening to The Weekend, for whatever reason, and thank goodness you are, you're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler here on WCHL 97.9 The Hill. Okay, we're back for our closing moments here with Dr. Aaron Keck, and we're talking about politics, and you know, we talk about Trump, and, you know, they could shut down the mall and come back next week, and we would still be feverishly talking about this, and maybe we would cover half of what's out there, which is, it is, you know, news that's coming out, feels like it's trying to drink out of a fire hose, is very, very difficult to cover. A lot of people are saying, oh, don't you wish you were a political reporter in Washington now? I'd say, well, no, because, I mean, it's a ticket to a nervous breakdown.
Yeah,
I just don't know how you do it.
Although you do get parodied on SNL. Like, Glenn Thrush has got to be thrilled that Bobby Moynihan gets to play him every week.
You know, that was so great. That was so great. I don't know what's better, watching that or watching him talk about that. It's so great. I mean, how many of you even knew who Glenn Thrush was?
I didn't.
And now he's a TV guy.
He's a major character on Saturday Night Live.
He's probably picked up a million Twitter followers. By the way, follow me on Twitter at Gene Bolduc. Send your story ideas.
Look at that
segue. Tell me why you want to come on the Weekend Water Cooler and talk about something, anything other than Donald Trump. But listen, politics local. All politics is local. And Aaron is going to give us the update now on the Supreme Court decision to refer back the North Carolina redistricting maps and gerrymandering and so forth. That's now been referred back to
the lower court.
Which so is, they didn't just throw it out and say, you people are all crazy. They sent it back.
Yeah.
Is this not the third time they've sent it back?
No, different case.
That's
you're,
a different
you're thinking
piece
of
the,
yeah.
See, I'm
the
thinking
thing
of
is,
the voter
and this
ID
is,
thing.
This
okay.
is the confusing thing
right.
about gerrymandering
Please
is that we've
me.
Got the we've got the redistricting of 2011.
Right.
We have the
redistricting
of 2016 after another court required the General Assembly to go back and redraw the district lines.
Right.
So we've got two different redistrictings that have happened in the last 10 years or 7 years. We've got U.S. congressional district lines that were drawn. We've got state House and Senate district lines that were drawn.
And these are not the same districts.
Not the same, no.
Of course.
We've got concerns about racial gerrymandering, so drawing the district lines to disadvantage black voters. And then we've got the more obvious partisan gerrymandering, which is drawing the district lines to disadvantage Democratic voters, which can also be challenged in court. The Supreme Court, and the thing that I'm watching with partisan gerrymandering is that the Supreme Court has never ruled that partisan gerrymandering is unconstitutional.
Right.
All of this is the 14th Amendment equal protection clause, which is guarantee of equal protection under the laws. That's where we get the idea of one person, one vote.
Right.
Everyone's vote counts the same. So
That's
every
right.
congressional district has the same number of people in it and all that. And it's also where we get, and also the 15th Amendment, which guarantees the right to vote regardless of your race. That's also important for the racial gerrymandering cases. But the Supreme Court has never ruled that partisan gerrymandering is unconstitutional. The reason they haven't is that they have not been able to come up with a clear standard for determining how much partisan gerrymandering is too much. Like every time you draw the district lines, the way you draw them is going to benefit one party over another. The question is how much is too much to the point where if you are a Democrat, you're not actually being treated equally by the laws. Or if you're a Republican, you're not being treated equally.
It's a human enterprise, too.
Yeah.
So.
There are now social scientists, political scientists, and by the way, this is why social sciences and humanities deserve to be funded and deserve to be supported at the college and university level and not just those STEM fields that we're all excited about.
Right.
There are social scientists who have developed a standard for determining how much is too much. Based on that, they have filed challenges to the district lines in Wisconsin and also the district lines in North Carolina. And those cases are making their way to the Supreme Court now. So we're going to watch that. But with all of those different things, congressional lines, state lines,
I don't know why
racial gerrymandering, partisan gerrymandering, the 2011 lines, the 2016 lines, there's like six different cases that are going through the courts right now, and the rulings are different times. The states are the one you referred to that the state Supreme Court has had three different times. In that particular case, the state Supreme Court actually ruled that the district lines were fine, that particular challenge was not correct. But in other cases, the courts have ruled that the challenge was accurate, and they've thrown the lines out. It's ridiculous. And the way to solve this problem, by the way, is to establish a nonpartisan redistricting commission so that the people who are drawing the lines do not have a direct personal interest in the way the lines are drawn, which is currently ridiculous and has always been ridiculous.
That's
and it's led to nothing but corruption and expensive lawsuits and constitutional violations, and has been doing so for decades and decades and decades.
So
it's not just the Republicans in 2010. It was the Democrats in 2000, Democrats in the 90s, Democrats in the 80s, and so on back.
So Democrats, elected Democrats, when you do take back the House and Senate at the state level, then when the North Carolina General Assembly...
bloody
the
thing
they
ought thing to do.
The first thing you should do is this.
A nonpartisan redistricting commission. If they don't, I will be so disappointed.
Because, you know, really, this payback pendulum is just, everybody is exhausted of this.
You, in the last segment we're talking about, you wanted to talk about the obscure clauses in the Constitution
yes.
that we always skim over, but
yes.
they're in there and they're important.
They're in
and
there.
You were talking about the president shall take care that the laws mm-hmm. be faithfully executed. Let's talk about the fact that the Constitution also guarantees a Republican government, small r Republican government,
right.
which is
That's
representative
right.
democracy.
Not direct
in this
democracy.
Case,
right.
Our gerrymandering in North Carolina
really
is so
that.
Bad
it
and has
that.
Been so bad that we don't have a Republican government. Like, we've got district lines that are drawn so egregiously badly that in a state where it's a swing state, where the presidential election is always 50-50 or just a little bit on one side or the other for the last three presidential cycles, 08, 12, and 16. The gubernatorial election was like a 50-50 split last year. There are more registered Democrats than Republicans in North Carolina. And by all accounts, it's a 50-50 state. In the upcoming election of 2018, where we will have new district lines, literally the best thing that Democrats can hope for, the best case scenario in a state like that, is to win enough seats to keep the Republicans from having a veto-proof majority
right.
in the House and Senate. That's the best case scenario. The
right.
idea that in a 50-50 state, Democrats have any shot at all of actually retaking one of those two houses is... it's literally impossible because of the way the lines are drawn.
Well, that's
not
perfectly...
because of the way the voters are voting, but because of the way the lines are drawn.
That's a perfectly terrible note to end on, but I'm afraid that's where we are. Nice hijacking there. So
you asked me to.
So
Nonpartisan Redistricting Commission, endgerrymanderingnow.org. Visit
that's,
it.
That's right.
Call your legislators.
Excellent. You know what? Call, scream, complain, and join us next week for the Weekend Water Cooler as we continue our plan to overthrow the government. Aaron, as always, thank you so much
thank
for joining
you.
Me. And we'll be back next week. Goodness gracious, I hope so. Here on WCHL 97.9 The Hill. Everybody have a great weekend.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.